Everyone, welcome to Spotlight. Today I have the pleasure of interviewing Dr. Dan Thompson. And Dan has a lot of interesting things to tell us in many areas of his life. One of the main reasons I wanted to interview him today, September 7th, 2002, is because of a wonderful accomplishment Dan had last year in his walk for freedom. Dan crossed Illinois on foot to raise money for the victims of 9/11. I had the pleasure of reading his journal, his account of that event, and a newspaper article about it. And it's very moving. I was very impressed by Dan's generous spirit and his tenacity. And with that, Dan, take it away. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your employment, your education, your family, and about the walk. I'll let you run with it.
Well, I'm honored to be allowed to be on this great site here, and I'm glad that Jennifer has a site available. I am about, actually I am a half a century old now, everybody reminds me, 50. I went to the Illinois School for the Visually Impaired, the School for the Blind in Jacksonville, Illinois, for residential school, and I am now teaching there. I graduated from there in 1972, and finally got to go to college in the early or late 70s, mainly because I didn't have enough people to believe that I could make it through college. Mr. Rushing can relate to some things like that. I have an 18-year-old boy, Brandon, and a 24-year-old girl, Amy, one grandchild, Bradley. And I live in Jacksonville, Illinois, obviously. When I got out of college, let's go back to 1972. When I graduated, I left and started at the bottom with nothing. My parents had some very strong views that I couldn't agree with, so I left and slept on the streets for a few weeks, just to, because that was the only choice. So I came up from the bottom and eventually got to work for an organization called, I think it's called Visually Handicapped Managers of Illinois. They changed their name. Visually Handicapped Managers of Illinois. And it's blind vendors that go out and work in different federal agencies and such. You guys have probably heard about it, so. And in that, I worked in Peoria, Illinois, at a place called Allied Agencies. And there I got involved in a lot of non-for-profit organizations. A gentleman came to me one day and asked me if I'd walk 50 miles to beat a world's record that was held by some visually impaired man in Wisconsin. He did it in a week. I said, I can do that in one day. So that was my first venture into the walking stuff. And I walked from Peoria to Bloomington that day. That was about a 55-mile walk in 13 hours. And it was about 20 degrees below zero that day. We did that for the Peoria Association of Retarded Citizens. Dare I even say that R word nowadays. And I raised them around $5,000 for that one. Back there, around that same area, I wanted to start an organization or something that could give things to little kids that were abandoned and had no parents or had parents that could care less, as I did when I left. So I just, out of the shot in the dark, I put an ad in the newspaper in Peoria at Christmas time, and I said, anyone that would like to buy a child a gift, all you're allowed to have is their first name, please contact me. And I was working through what they called a Guardian Angels Children's Home then. They call it a status offender home now. But it was really called an orphanage. And I got 25 people that were willing to buy gifts for these kids that first year. And in the next 5 years I did that, I serviced about maybe a couple thousand kids. And my most rewarding time was when the boat people came in from Vietnam, and we had 250 children. I think the oldest was about 15 years old. Most of them asked for dolls or English dictionaries, and they sang I Love You More Every Day by Leo Sayers in Vietnamese. It was quite moving. When I left to go to college, that sort of fell apart because I was the only one keeping it from going, along with my wife, Judy. Then the next year, after I did that work for Peer Association of Retarded Citizens, I did one for the Arthritis Foundation. That was a little tad bit shorter. I walked from Peoria to Morton. And that was about 60 miles. Now, that was a really, really hot day. That was a little over 100 degrees. That one I paid for greatly because I got pretty bad sunburn. I did take sunscreen, but it didn't seem to really help that much. And I raised somewhere around, $4,000 for that one. Then I did another bike. A ride on a tandem bike in the middle of winter for the United Cerebral Palsy Organization in Peoria. And that one was interesting because it had an ice storm in the middle of it. And so we were going down a hill and the bike decided to have its own control. And so we probably slid pretty close to the way down this very big 2 or 3 mile hill at a high rate of speed. After that, I walked the rest of the way. I had one of the rules are when you walk along the highway, you gotta have a chaser car or a shadow car or someone with you or somewhere. And that one, I had a different person walk every 5 miles, and usually when you assign them, not a whole lot of people show up, but one guy showed up for most of it. So that one, it was 40 miles that we did from Canton to Peoria, Illinois. And that was a small fundraiser, about $2,000. Now, I had people wanting me to do more spectacular things, and I wasn't in for the spectacular part of it. I was just in for giving things to others that I never got to have as a kid, because I came from a pretty bad family environment, and I won't bore you with a lot of that, but it's probably whatever you can think is the worst, this would be the worst. So, I decided to sit on a flagpole to break the world's record in the Guinness Book of World Records. So, the Navy Battalion in Peoria decided to build a little house that was 6 feet tall, 6 feet wide, and 4 foot from back to front, being deep. And the only way to get in was this little sliding plexiglass window door. And then when it was down, of course, you stayed in there, otherwise you'd drop out 35 feet. And it had a Christmas tree-type metal steel stand underneath it that we attached, so it was right into the top of the flagpole. On each corner, there were anchors that you dropped down underneath the ship, resting on the ground, holding the box tight up there on top of the pole. It could withstand 80-mile-an-hour wind. And a few times it got to be rough up there, being that tall. Probably a good 40 mile an hour. Thankfully no 80s, but it did get whipped around a little bit. Inside, I had a carpeted floor and one bench that floated down. And in the back, there was a wooden bucket type square box that I lowered and raised food up and down. I know you're wondering, how did I get rid of any waste material? That was about the same thing. Had a bucket and I just lowered it down, raised it up. Washing is the same thing. So I had stayed up there for 14 days and 17 hours. And I was raised up there on a crane, and then I was brought down on a fire truck lift. The funny thing was I was requested not to shave, which was very difficult because I had a little beard by the time I got done and quite itchy. And I didn't wear any shoes when I was up there all that time, because the carpeted floor was just fine. But when I got out on the hard cement and put my shoes on, I had a tendency of walking really hard and almost pretty, like, felt like you're putting your foot to cement. But it's sort of weird. I raised somewhere around $10,000 for that. For that was for the United States. No, what was that? Oh, Mid State Special Olympics. The one after that, which would be about 1979, and I'm still doing the Care for Kids all this time. That was for near my organization. That was for where I raised money at Christmas time only to buy gifts for children. Somebody asked me to try to be buried underneath the parking lot of Northridge Mall in Peoria. It almost happened, but we couldn't get the appropriate insurance, and I'm sort of happy it didn't now. It was going to be in a car that was a little larger than a good-sized man, and I had to take isometric exercises, and I had a specially built air conditioner inside. And then they had a way that I could get food down to me, but that was not really going to be solids. And I was supposed to stay down there for 3 months, but it didn't come through. Anyway, I left and went to Carbondale, Illinois, to go to college and try to get the same care for kids thing there with children, and the toy for tots sort of got kicked off at me. And then what really aggravated me is some of the college administrators signed their kids up for my program, which is supposed to be for poverty-stricken people or orphans. And when I saw the abuse of the program, I said, forget it. So I didn't do that one anymore. And in college, I was on the student council and the vice president, and then also I was in the chairman of minority affairs, which sort of took care of all the different minority rights and such on campus to make sure it was up to snuff. When I left about 1984, I started teaching at a public school for my first couple of years. My first group of kids were 5 majorly behavior disorder kids that skipped 8th grade, and only one made it through high school.
Dan, I cut you off, and I'm going to ask you to restart about your teaching career. Pull your mic back a little from your mouth. I don't know that that's going to help, but the distortion's getting pretty bad. So would you mind starting again with your teaching career?
Yep, I probably just moved that mic too close. Is that better for you?
Yes, indeed. That is better. Maybe Dennis, who is recording for us, might be willing to get together with you sometime and pre-record your first session. It's so wonderful. I hate not to have a better, clear copy of it for archive. But anyway, let's pick up again with your teaching career, and thank you.
Thank you for your patience. After I left college, and I went to a public school and taught for a few years there, and I had 5 severely behavior disordered children that had skipped 8th grade because there was nothing more they felt they could do with them, unfortunately. One of those made it through school. One killed himself, another one accidentally got killed. The other one just sort of dropped out. But they made it until I left as a junior year. Then I became an adjudicator for the Department of Rehabilitation. It was a disability determination, Social Security disability determinations adjudicator. It's the first one in the United States, totally blind. And I worked there for a year while I was waiting to get another teaching job that I was hoping to get at the Illinois School for the Visually Impaired in Jacksonville, Illinois. That's where I sort of grew up, and that was my home. And that's where I first learned that parents can really love you and have some concern and take care of you. So it's probably good that things didn't really work out because they didn't do much accommodation there. And I wrote a few letters and finally got an interview at the school and got hired in about 1990, somewhere in the area. I started out in elementary there. with some a mixture of really low functioning and some pretty high functioning in the same class. And I liked a lot of animals and hands-on activities in my room, so I had quite a few of that in my room. I had a couple of chinchillas and some hedgehogs, guinea pig, a rabbit, and a couple parakeets, and I also raised chickens and ducks in my classroom, along with all the other stuff you do all day. And Mr. Rushing happened to be in that one of those classes back then. I didn't do a whole lot of fundraising during that first couple of years because I was too involved with school. And then we got the big influx of computers in class, in school, so they got involved in setting up the technology program at the school. In the background, a lot of it for free in the early days, after hours. And from about 1992 or 3 until about 1998, I was informally the technology sort of director, taking care of stuff with no pay. Then I taught high school for a while, and I taught just about every level that there is to teach in school, and I've also written a book of poems called Life's Inner Secrets, and another book called Beyond the Baroque, about my great-grandfather who went to World War I, and those are in the library there at school. It came about at 9-1, I'm going to jump up to 9-1-1, there's a lot of things in between there. I told you about my kids, so. Also, my wife went to school with me. We started going together in 7th grade, and we've been married now for 30 years. So it's one of those little childhood sweetheart things. But anyway, back to 9-1-1. I felt I wanted to do something for the country, and I couldn't join the armed forces. So I thought I would try to do something that would have enough sacrifice that would mean something to those firemen and soldiers and everyone protecting us and take care of us, those unsung heroes. I first was going to walk across the state of Illinois long ways, which was only 450 miles, but I couldn't get enough time off. So I got state security to give me a week using my vacation days and personal days, and got a week off. So that would cover about 230 miles based on a 50-mile-a-day walk. So I started on October 8th, in Quincy, Illinois, at the Missouri border, and set my goals to walk 50 miles a day on the average. It pretty well evened up that much. And the first day was pretty tough, because I hadn't walked 50 miles for a long time, and there's a few funny things that happened on the way out of Quincy. Beside the curb, sometimes they have little manholes, and usually those manholes are supposed to be pretty well out of the way of traffic, so you're not going to be stepping in them. But these, for some reason, there's a trench that went along the curb where you would step right down. And unfortunately, they were out farther than they really should have been and had no covering on them. And I've since then written to the mayor, and they've been fixed. But so I'm going along, and in my first mile, I step out to the street, and I step in one of these things. And my ankle turned pretty bad. But I faked it, and I said I was all right. I had a shadow car that drove ahead of me. Usually kept ahead of me for about a mile, but since we were just coming out of the town, the lady then, Miss Crumley, stayed sort of close by. So I limp across the street, and there I come up with another one of those darn things on the other side of the street. The first probably 10 or 15 miles after that was pretty stressful, shaking off the old twisted ankle, and I was worried then that the whole thing would be done. But then after about 15 miles or so out of town, I came across another thing that I was a little bit afraid of. I'm for some reason grown to have a fear of heights in my old age, and We were going across this bridge that they were fixing on the right-hand side. The right-hand side lane is as it's going. And it was, you could see, if you could see, all the way down, quite a few feet to the next level below. So Miss Crumley said she would walk with me across that bridge because they had construction things all around and such. Now on the right-hand side of me where the lane should have been, there was a barricade there that it didn't make me feel any better knowing that there was nothing on the other side of it for a good amount of distance down. So she had the nerve to tell me, "Oh, I can see the top of the trees from here. We're pretty well even with them." And that was enough to make me feel like I'd like to crawl the rest of the way or just stop. But I fought my fear and kept my mouth shut, and she had no idea. I was already terrified. And got across that. It was a good half a mile. And he came down the other side, and then when I got off, I told her my inner fears that when she said about the grid, the trees. That was quite a harrowing experience. I guess you almost have to beat out a field of fear when you're up that high and you feel like you're going to fall every second. It was sort of scary. So the first day, I walked from 7 to 7. 7 in the morning till 7 in the evening, and I covered around 45 miles. And the next day was pretty well uneventful. It's when you get to the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, things got a little strange. Wednesday started out with a terrible rainstorm, and I forgot one thing. I really apologize, but I go back to Tuesday when I got to town, and the town was very nice, and they let me stay in a hotel. They gave the hotel free, so I get in a hotel and I start taking my shoes off, and I put duct tape, really thin duct tape, on the bottom of my feet to reduce blistering, and the ends of my toes are always taped. So there will be no blistering there, supposedly. And I had bought the best pair of walking shoes around. They would cost around $150. And I get in the hotel and I start taking my shoes off. And I take my socks. I have also some special socks that are supposed to reduce sweating. And I get socks off and I start taking the Band-Aid off. And I, now this, for any listeners, I apologize, but I just want to sort of share some of the feeling I had there, the fear I had, and then you can cut out whatever you want. I pulled the two of the Band-Aids off, and a good portion of the blistery skin came off with it. When I pulled the third one off, I thought half my baby toe was coming. So I looked at that baby toe, and I feel something hard, and what it was with my toenail, and a good portion of something. So I called the receptionist who I got to know a little bit there. And I told her I would like her to come to my hotel room, and then if she could handle something, I need to have a look at my toe. And she got in there and we opened it up, looked at it, and probably a fourth of the front of the toe fell off. And because it was not supposed to do that. So again, I thought that would be the end of the game there. And the painful thing was getting in the bathtub. I think Satan had come up out of the drain, and I had a taste of hell there for a while. Pretty hot and burning, even though the water was not that hot. I just got the bullet there, so to speak, and had the will to continue. I knew that it was not half as bad as some of those people that were burned to death in the New York towers and they were crushed. And so I just sort of tried to think that in my head and keep going. I just got up the next morning. Of course, that night I put a lot of medication on and the Red Cross. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention completely. I apologize, but the fundraising went to half for the local Red Cross and half for the New York Disaster Relief Fund, and we ended up getting $6,000 in the total end of it. Anyway, the next day I fixed myself all up again, taped everything on, and put a few extra bandages on that one bad toe, and I walked baby steps for quite a while because I couldn't really move my feet that well. But once it got stretched out a little bit, and that was Wednesday when I came up here with the rain. I had an interview there Wednesday with the TV station, and as I was talking to the TV station, the wind was bad enough, it turned the umbrella inside out and ripped it out away. And the wind was about 25 miles an hour there. So the morning was quite interesting. The person riding the car had it easy. So they asked me if I wanted to get in the car, and I said no. I had a poncho on and kept it over my head. I had to wear this placard with the really bright letters that people could see me, and then another gentleman stopped by and gave me this vest that had fluorescent strips on it. Several police stopped by and asked me what I was doing, but they all really knew. They just didn't check with their offices to see, and they figured out I was all right. I did have to tell several district police what I was doing way before I started and get permission from the different counties to cross through their county. Wednesday, about afternoon time, I came up to this bridge. It was about a half mile long, and my shadow car was quite a ways ahead of me. And I had to cross the bridge if I was going to keep going or stand there until who knows when the shadow car came back. Well, I started going across the bridge, and I realized when I got about just a few feet on the thing that it was not even meant for people to be crossing. It was really meant for traffic only. And I found out after the fact that it even said that on a sign. But it was frequented tremendously by pretty big semis. And my first taste came very soon. Big old semi come thundering through there, and I'm pushed up against the rail. And the rail was a little shaky. But it was a good-sized rail, and there was nothing underneath the rail. Except every once in a while, one post going down. And my fear of heights sort of thinking about that again. But during that small, brief half mile, I must have had 20 or so semis decide to come across that darn bridge. And all that afternoon of walking down that road, I hardly saw any. So it was, that was quite, and you almost have to be there to feel the fear. And the fear and the anticipation of the next one coming. Further down the road, there was a pretty good gap there on the side of the road, like I had been digging. And I attempted to get around it, and I had to walk across the plank there to get around some of that, which was pretty narrow, and some pretty well good-sized openings on the side. But my shadow car finally caught up to me about 2 miles later and had said that she had driven around that stuff and forgot to tell me about it, so that was quite interesting. My next harrowing experience to me was on the evening of Thursday. And I met a lot of really nice people. Oh, I want to tell you something else. For those nature lovers out there. One time I was walking down the country road, going between some very deserted towns, and the driver, a gentleman who was following me after I got past this one part, he said, "Did you know a deer has been walking beside you for the last 2 miles?" Just walking out there in the wooded area along the ditch there, and not flinching, not jumping, nothing, just walking along and glancing at you once in a while. That was to me God's sort of gesture of saying, "I'm with you, nature's with you." So it was just quite moving. And then the same thing sort of happened on another day. A horse was galloping along there over in its fence. Now, I don't know if it was just galloping along just to be cool and doing its thing over there, but it was sort of neat because it galloped along about 2 miles there, the distance I was walking, and I did come across several bits of roadkill. I won't share that with you because it was quite unpleasant. But now back to my Thursday evening. It got real rainy, and I had a police escort was supposed to meet me at Rantoul, Illinois. And a gentleman was going to let me stay at his house. So I was supposed to call 10 miles out of town, which I had a cell phone with me, and I did call. And it was pouring down rain. This evening was quite moving, and it was probably one of the more moving nights I ever had. And during this trip, I prayed a lot and asked the Lord to give me some strength during some very stressful times. And this was one of the very stressful evenings. The wind was very tough, and I had a poncho on, and it was very cold rain. And I knew I had another 20 miles to go. So I'm asking the Lord in my head, you know, speaking there by myself, just give me some strength and let me see if it's all worth it. Help me get through this time. And about maybe 3 or 4 minutes later, I kid you not, a lady came from, to me it felt like she just sort of dropped out in front of me because I didn't hear where she came from. But I know, I mean, realistically, she got out of the car somewhere. But to me, it's just like she appeared there. And she ran up and gave me a hug and gave me this money to give to the driver. And so I, before she could speak, I said, thank you very much for coming out in the rain and giving this money for the support. And the girl just started crying and falling apart and saying, I'm the one that should be the one to thank. Now, I didn't believe. I mean, I felt more like she should and hugged me and thanked me. And it was just heartwarming. And even when I think about it now, it makes a tear. The warmth, and as some people would maybe not quite thank me, the strength that I do, that I believe God sent that lady to give me strength. And that evening, the rain seemed a little bit warmer. And in my heart, it was a lot warmer to make it through the rest of that evening, because I had about 20 more miles in the rain, and it was very bad rain, and my shoes were soaking, and I was terrified that the shoes were going to shrink, and I wouldn't get them on for the last day. So the police car, the radio station, all that stuff, came and met me about 5 miles out of town, and I thought I would just be walking to the town, and then stopping and getting a snack there at McDonald's, which I plan on buying. But that was not the plan. Their plan was that I would walk through the town and then go to this person's house at the other end. So that added, instead of the 40 miles I sort of thought I would do that week, day, it added about another 12 miles. And when I thought I was going to be done in about another half an hour, it ended up being 2 hours more. And because if I walked really fast, if I was really wanting to get done quickly, I could cover anywhere from 5 to 8 miles an hour. On the average, I covered about 5. I try to make 5 all the time. And I have a listing of my route and how many miles per day. Well, I did get through town, and my shoes were pretty soaked. And that night, I lost 2 more toenails. But it was not as bad as the baby toe. It never did quite get back again. It's still a little bit shorter than the rest. But the other 2 toenails did eventually come back, but when I took my shoes off, there was a little girl. I was staying in her house and taking my shoes off with her because they wanted to see my feet for some silly reason. And unfortunately, 2 of my toenails came off in the Band-Aids, and it didn't really hurt because at that point, they were sort of worn off. They sort of dropped off. Sorry for those graphical things there, guys. And I soaked my feet, and it was really sort of cool. Another thing that God blessed me with that night, it was a very warm, thoughtful house, and they didn't have a whole lot, but they made it feel like it was a mansion. And the love and the caring that came from that house, I'll never forget. They gave me what little they had to eat, and once, and they even let me sleep in their bed, their husband and wife, and they slept in the front room of the couch. They had a Doberman Pinscher that would bark at everybody and get really mad and angry when people came in. But that night, that dog didn't do that. He sort of came up and, you know, sat by me and licked me, and I get along with most animals anyway, and we had a pretty good time. Never barked at me once. So the next day was a Friday, and it was a very hard day because my feet were not quite agreeable with what I wanted to do. So I walked pretty well in small steps, and I didn't make the miles I wanted to make that day. I made my miles, but not in the time. I got done later than I expected. I did cover about 45 miles, but I started at 6, and that was pretty early. And I got done around 6:30 or so in the evening. But the first couple hours were pretty painful and pretty stressful, but I remembered the night on Thursday. And many times during that whole route, I didn't mention, but I think we raised $1,000 in gifts of people stopping and giving me money. And all those times that happened was not so long after I was speaking for strength in my heart and to God. Sometime later, after each one of those times, maybe sometime might be a half an hour, sometime a few minutes, somebody stopped at the shadow car and gave them some money. Could be 5, could be 10. But it was enough to give me a boost. But the greatest boost I got was on that Thursday, with that lady who came from what seemed to be nowhere. And she gave me the greatest boost of all. And then Friday, I got to the hamburger place in the evening. I was supposed to meet the it was a nephew of my old coach in high school. So I walk in there and tell him who I am, and I gave everybody that I went to that gave me some housing a plaque and a letter thanking them. And everybody stood up and gave me a standing ovation. I don't feel like I deserve that. I didn't do it for recognition or praise. And I want to make sure you understand that today. I did it as a sacrifice that I should give, and also to bring the state of Illinois together in one step with the country at that point in a union, and not try to get a whole lot of glory out of it, just a lot of unity. Too many times we have a lot of different little cliques and different little boxes we hang out in, and I wanted to open all those and join them. So I got about $1,000 from that rest, that little hamburger place that evening. And several people came up and said I made them proud to be an American, and that was enough right there. So that's about what I've done. If anybody has any questions, I keep rambling. But that's where I am today, and I now teach technology at the Illinois School for the Visually Impaired. I'm a technology specialist. It wouldn't seem like that today, hey? With a microphone problem, but I have no idea what his attitude was. I did sort of play around and fix it, but I'm not sure exactly how yet. So there I am. If you have any questions, I'll let go of the button there. And thank you for giving all the time you have, and thank you, Jennifer, for this excellent service of For the People. I use it quite a bit.
Well, Dan, as I said, your story is very moving. I think if we could, we would all give you a standing ovation right now. Proud to know you. And there's not much I can say. It's an amazing story. An amazing person. God bless you.
And God bless you all too. Everyone listening. And God bless you, Jennifer. You're a fine young lady. If there's no other questions, then I will sign off and take care of some lesson plans if you don't have anything else.
I'm sure there'll be a few questions. And before I forget, I want to thank Becky for her wonderful role in Spotlight and Dennis for the recording. And the mic's open to anyone who'd like to maybe just tell Dan how special he is or maybe have a question.
Yeah, Dan, this is Becky. I want to thank you for coming on as well, and certainly admire what you have done. It is absolutely remarkable. I just can't imagine doing what you did. I'm curious, how much sight, if any, do you have, Dan, and how much, I know you made reference to the shadow cars and that sort of thing, but you were actually walking alone? You didn't have a guide dog or anyone walking beside you?
I'm totally blind. Been blind since 5 or 6 in that area. I had a cane, and the cane tip is pretty worn down. No, I didn't have a guide dog. Shadow car is there's two gentlemen and 3 ladies, one for each day. Wait a minute. No, I had more than that. They split it up in 2 shifts, so it'd be about 6 hours apiece or so. So I had a total of 10. And they just drove ahead of me. And when I stopped for lunch, which I did stop for lunch, and well, a couple of times I ate when I was walking. But you're really supposed to stop 5 minutes per hour to give yourself a rest. And I did try to do that. Sometimes I wanted to keep going just to meet a goal of myself. I got behind a little bit. I tried never to walk less than 3 miles an hour. So if I did get close to that, I pushed myself and made it be up to 4 or 5. And I'm totally blind, and there's your answer there.
Hi, Dan. Thank you for your story. This is Marcia, and my husband Jim and I are listening. Something that I think you should tell the room should know, when you visualize this man walking along, I have a tendency to visualize flat ground. The area that he's walking in, Jim and I are very familiar with from bicycling, and it is extremely hilly in some of the areas. So he is not only just walking, he is walking uphill, which takes a lot more effort. He is going downhill, which is just as hard.
Ah, yes, some of those uphills. I would frequently, if the shadow driver came along, I'd say, and how much more is of this hill? And you could feel yourself going up that hill. No matter how gradual it was, after you walked about 30 miles, your back, your legs felt the tension. And once you got up near the top, you sort of tried to put a little bit more energy into it, but then you unfortunately paid for that later. Because you get a little tired. But down the hills are really great. A lot of holes on the side of the road. You gotta watch that. And in some places, there was no side of the road, to walk on. You'd walk sort of at an angle, sort of in the ditch, or try not to be in the ditch, and a car would come past and you had to step into the ditch. So it was a lot of on and off. And the first couple of days, I had to walk a lot on this darn gravel on the side of the road, which wasn't really cool. For your ankles, but did it anyway. So it was definitely not flat ground. There was a few times it was for maybe about 5 or 10 miles it was flat, and that was very nice. There was only one time I met with one negative person, and I don't really even know who they were, but it's a person in a farm truck, and I got really mad and said I was a hazard to the countryside and I should not be walking down the road with a blind man. I wasn't in his way either. He just shouted out some pretty foul things, and obviously he was not a real countryman, not a real American in my way. Thank you.
Did you have to do any, I know you've been walking like this for quite a while. By the way, my name is Country Music Mar, nice to meet you, and very incredible story indeed. What did you do to build up your endurance level? Did you do a lot of exercising and things like that to try and get in shape?
Well, now this is a dumb thing. Nice to meet you too, but I've done several walks, but before that walk, I hadn't done any walks for a good 10 years or so, maybe a little less than that. I just decided one day that I was going to do it. And I knew it would be stressful, but didn't have a whole lot of time to prepare for anything. I just decided I was going to do it. I went and got the shoes, and I went to the athletic director on campus and asked what store he suggested and where to get what's the best shoe out there. And I went to the store and told him what I was doing, and I wondered if they would donate the shoes, but they would not do that. So, and I made that known on the local radio station. But I just decided to go with the strength of God and willpower. Occasionally willpower almost faded me. It almost did me in, but the Lord was there with me and helped me make it through it, because a couple of times it was pretty tough. And then there were some pretty cool times. I remember a Tuesday afternoon walking down this really long stretch down cornfields and bean fields, and people out there doing their combining, and it was not too hot. It was just perfect. It was a beautiful afternoon, and you're out there with the countryside, such a free feeling. It was just really a gorgeous day. And I have never smelled the smell of bean dust and corn dust during the combine. It's sort of cool feeling, cool smell. Maybe sounds sort of dumb, but it's sort of a cool experience. But I didn't do any training this time, and just did it on my own willpower.
How did you know where to go?
Thank you. Good question. I forgot to tell you that part. Two students, Ming Juan Zahner and Octavio Leo, two of my good students, and the mobility instructor, mapped out the map I would be going down. And we wrote up exactly the towns I would be going into and how the distance between each town and some roads that I may encounter along the way. And I kept that sort of journal guide with me. But in long stretches, you just kept walking, and they sort of went over the roads, and most of them were not too busy. There's a couple of busy highways along the way. The only ones I really paid attention to was when I got into the busy towns where I had to know about. And I had all the maps. Each day, I made myself a map. I made a map for that day with a string on a piece of paper, a big size piece of paper, in a notebook, as far as where to go. And I thought to myself, I'll be using this along the road. But to tell you the truth, I didn't use it a lot. I just mainly took the braille part and stuck it underneath my arm. And the rest of the book was just sort of sizable. I left in the car because it was just sort of too big to carry. And after a while of walking, you don't feel like carrying too much of anything. I had a radio on my belt, and that's about a small, tiny one. And I just paid attention to the distance between towns so I could know when I got to one town how far it was and how far I've gone. And I had called all the people I would be staying with and several of the mayors so I know phone numbers in case I need to. So I had them real handy with me. That's how I did it, and I have that book still in our school historical room. And I have all that stuff in a file. If anybody would like the journal, I'd be willing to email it to them and let them see the whole route and everything.
Dan, this is Carl, Pittsburgh, PA. Very touching, moving story.
Thank you, Carl. I appreciate that comment, and I appreciate you taking time out of your Saturday and listening.
I'll tell you, I know for myself it makes me feel pretty wussy when I hear somebody like you and all the things that you went through and you just kept persevering, and I'm one of these scaredy cats. You know, I have trouble crossing a street if it's too wide. I'm from a small town and haven't had a whole lot of experience with those things, and I get scared of a lot of things real easy, and hearing your story just makes me feel like a real wimp.
Well, I'll admit there were several times that I was scared. Some long side of the road experiences where there wasn't a lot to walk on and cars come to me very close. Some of the height experiences I had, it was frightening. But we all, and I'm sure you do too, have some very unique characteristics and qualities that if we only knew, you could probably offer the world. And there's probably some real cool special things about you. I thank you very much for listening as well.
Yes, she certainly does have an awful lot of talents. And I think that your story would be wonderful material for a new song, Mar.
Yeah, boy, I guess so. What an inspirational thing. I'm sure glad I was here to witness that. That was one of the neater things I've heard in a long time.
Well, sorry for the delay in the beginning, all the technical difficulties, but at least you finally got it on. And I'm glad I touched all you individuals and take it out and share it with others. And I hope I touch a lot of people that maybe they can give something. It doesn't have to be financial, but think about the people around you and look farther than the outside. Look deep into them. Because not always what you see on the outside is a true story. There's a heck of a lot on the inside that is untold and will be kept untold because it just maybe makes other people feel uncomfortable or whatever. But we all have a lot to offer. Very special things about all of us.
That's true, Dan, and your story certainly proves that. Again, I would like to ask Dennis to get with you, and he's our sound card guru. Get your sound maximized and record your two long passages. It's such a wonderful story, and we'll be archiving it, and I'd like to have the audio quality better if you'll indulge us in that way.
No problem, Dennis. Wherever you want to meet, I can do it most any time. On the weekdays, I won't be home until after 5, so that's 5 in Illinois time. But wherever you like to meet, let me know, or if it's easy to do it over the phone or direct, that's fine too.
Well, thank you, everyone. I have another commitment, but thank you, everyone. And, Dan, thank you so much. Thank you for being here today, sharing your story, and thank you for being exactly who you are.
Thank you. Dennis, I will tell you my email in case you want to contact me. That would be D as in dog, Thompson, T-H-O-M, P as in Paul, S-O-N, 5. At mc as in cat hsi.com, and that's all lowercase letters. So if you want to email me sometime, let me know when you'd like to meet, that'd be fine.
Dan, I'm sure he'll be getting in touch with you. He's recording, so he can't respond, but he'll be getting in touch with you, I'm sure, and thanks very much again for coming on Spotlight.